Welcome to the Retzel Health Law Hotspot. Health Law Hotspot is a podcast for physicians and health professionals that covers the legal issues and trends that affect the healthcare industry.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Health Law Hotspot. I'm Erica Adler, shareholder and head of the Health Law Practice Group at Retzel and Andrus. And today I'm joined by one of my colleagues, Karen Adinolfi, who's part of our Employment Services Group and is also a shareholder at Retzel and Andrus. Today, we're going to talk about a really timely topic having to do with whether employers can mandate vaccines for their employees and some employment-related issues and questions that have come up and that I've worked with Karen on recently. And I know there's lots of people out there, many physician, dental, and other types of practices and businesses that are facing these questions on an ongoing basis. So I thought it'd be really helpful if we could get together, and kind of chat and answer some of these questions. So thanks for joining us, Karen.
Thanks for the introduction. You know, vaccines have been sort of in the top of our mind since I'd say early spring, when it really became apparent that we were going to see a vaccine. A lot has happened. I agree this is a very timely topic, especially in some of the events of the last few days, weeks, and months. Happy to share information about what employers, including healthcare employers, should do when confronted with the question of should we or should we not mandate the vaccine for our employees. There are some specific healthcare issues that I will address a little later. But for the most part, the information that I'll be going over today is really applicable to any workplace, including those healthcare workplaces that would be interested. To address the elephant in the room, vaccines have become so political. What's really just a basic healthcare measure has really taken on a life of its own. And I think it has in some ways exacerbated the issue for employers because now they have to deal with that politicization when they're making those decisions and when they're engaging with their employees. But at the end of the day, you know, it's actually quite simple, the things that you need to consider when deciding whether or not to mandate the vaccine. Just a little caveat, I'll be speaking in very general terms. A lot of the vaccine issues are very state-by-state based. For instance, those who might be listening in Florida, you know, again, that's been very controversial, but there are some significant restraints on the ability to mandate vaccines or mandate masks, those kinds of things. So just be aware that there may be some state or local deviations from what we're talking about. So to the extent you're, you know, again, looking to make that decision, feel free to consult us and we can certainly sort of iron that out for you. Okay. But I would say, go ahead.
Let me just start then with the basic question, because, you know, our viewership is largely physician practices, mm-hmm. dental practices, doctors, other licensed professionals. And a lot of them are small, so they don't have their own health law department, right?
Sure.
So what they're saying to us generally is, you know, is it okay if I go out and say, look, if you want to work here, you need to be vaccinated and show us proof of vaccination. And if that is okay to do, what is the recommendation on how they go about doing mm-hmm. that?
Sure. And the short answer is yes. Employers in general can require the COVID-19 vaccine as well as any other vaccine that's available on the market as a condition of employment. So if an employer, whether large or small, healthcare or not, decides that that's the best option for their workforce, they're permitted to do that. There are some caveats to that and some exceptions, I think, that will prevent quite a few employers from ever getting to 100% of your workforce vaccinated. But yes, employers, as a very general rule, can mandate. And we'll talk about a little bit about what's the best way to go about doing that. Making the decision itself, there's some things that you need to take into account, you know, if only to weigh whether this is something that's even going to be feasible for your workforce. One of the topics has sort of lightened up a little bit in the last couple of days. On August 23rd, the FDA issued full approval to Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine. If you know, those of you who've been sort of following this know that the vaccines that have been available thus far have been under emergency use authorization by the FDA, which, you know, again, allows for some shortcutting of some procedure, approval procedures to get it to market faster. But now the Pfizer vaccine has been fully approved. And so I think for those employees and others who have said, look, I'm not comfortable taking what they would deem an experimental vaccine, you know, now we'll have to decide whether that is in fact the case, is that we do now have full approval just for that one. I anticipate that the others will follow. And to the extent there are other vaccines that are in development or coming to market, they will likely have to go through the full approval process rather than the emergency use. So we'll see how many additional vaccines this announcement spurs. But hopefully for those 16 and up, we'll see more people who were hesitant sort of get on board with it.
Right. So what kind of other, I mean, other than people who are just against them or just supposedly afraid of them, what kind of other issues are employers kind of encountering when they try and mandate vaccine?
Sure. There's basically two key considerations and obstacles that exist with respect to mandating your workforce to be vaccinated. The first is the Americans with Disabilities Act, as well as the corresponding state laws with respect to disability discrimination. And the second one is, in the federal system, it's the anti-discrimination provision as to religion under Title VII, and again, those corresponding state laws. Those are the two major obstacles, I think, to any workforce being 100% vaccinated. But there are some things that employers can still do in order to sort of get around that. And a lot of that has to do with examining whether, you know, those objections, whether disability or religion, can be accommodated in a particular workforce. Sometimes they will, sometimes they may not be able to be accommodated. But let's start with disability. So you may have an employee, you know, say you make the announcement, as of this date, we are going to require all of our employees to be vaccinated. And you have an employee come to you and say, my doctor has recommended that because of a medical condition I have, I am not able safely to be vaccinated. And I would like an exemption from that requirement. They're probably not going to say it that formally, but that's basically what they're asking. I want an exception. And a lot of times the employer's knee-jerk reaction to that is no, no exceptions. This is for everybody. But under the Americans with Disabilities Act, the ADA, the employer actually, when that objection is raised, has an obligation under the law to undergo what they call the interactive process. And basically that's an exchange of information and ideas by both the employer and the employee to say, okay, you can't conform to our rule about mandatory vaccinations. Why is that? You're allowed to get medical confirmation or documentation of the reason. You know, you're allowed to ask questions of the doctor if you need to, with the employee's consent. And you can also discuss with the employee, if you can't be vaccinated, is there anything we can do to allow you to remain employed here? And so that's what the obligation is. You can't just knee-jerk say no. At the end of the day, you may have to say no, but you have to go through this process first.
Right. And I think a lot of people don't do that, which is kind of what gets them in a little bit of trouble. And I always say, you know, the minute somebody uses the word disability, or I have an illness, or my doctor told me not to, like, they don't usually come out and say, I have something that comes under the ADA. They use keywords that you got to kind of listen for.
Right. And just to say, the employer doesn't need to use any specific language. They can just say, I can't. It may even take the form of, I don't want to. So the employer does have that obligation to follow up and not just dismiss something out of hand.
So people are not always clear about why they don't want to do it, but it's up to the employer then to kind of investigate and find out if there's a reason and if it's a valid reason and what the employer's obligations are, as opposed to just assuming that it's made up, not true, or saying we don't care what reasons you have, you do what we tell you to do. So just kind of making that clear. Now, you and I recently encountered a situation where somebody claimed, you know, in an extensive written letter that, you know, Jesus or whatever other religious affiliation there might be, prevented them from putting something like this into their body, and that they had a strongly held religious belief that made vaccinations, you know, not something they were going to consider. For this vaccination, it wasn't entirely clear to me whether it was all or just this one. And there was another component to that letter that you and I dealt with, which was that the person himself proposed how they would handle, you know, resolving the issue, which was, I'm willing to wear a mask, I'm willing to be tested, et cetera. So I thought that was really interesting. Kind of want to have you speak to how often are you hearing about religious objections and how should employers handle that?
Sure. Religious objections have come up here and there with respect to the vaccine. Not as much, I think, as I would have thought early on. Because I guess my thought was, we're going to see people with general anti-vaccination views, people who just don't believe in them or don't want them, trying to couch those in religious terms. And so far, knock wood, we haven't seen a lot of that. But the ones we have seen typically are on the on par with what you have described, that they have, the individual person has some belief based in religion, based in the Bible, maybe just based on spirituality, that prevents them from taking it. Some of it ranges from, if God wanted me to have the vaccine, he would have made me immune naturally. Or, you know, the Bible prohibits me from putting something unnatural and not made by God into my body. You know, things along that gamut. And so again, when an employer gets that either request or some statement to that effect, the knee-jerk reaction is always like, no, they're not valid, that's made up, that's not in the Bible, whatever the reaction is. And again, as with the ADA, it's up to the employer to, you know, again, question the employee, engage in that interactive process, sort of find out what the basis for this claimed religious belief is, and see if there's some way to accommodate it, whether it's, you know, as the person that you were talking about suggested, I'll agree to wear a mask all the time. I'll agree to be regularly tested for COVID, whatever it is. But again, it's important that an employer, you know, again, no matter how crackpot it might sound to an employer's ears, you know, that's, I think, a lot of times where employers go wrong by just dismissing it out of hand. Now, religion's a little bit different. If you remember, we were talking about the ADA, we said, well, you can request medical documentation. The question with religious beliefs is always, can we, and what sort of documentation should we look for? And the EEOC, which is the federal agency that handles these types of complaints, takes the position that if you don't have any reason to doubt that this is a sincerely held religious belief, then typically you don't ask for any further documentation of that. And that's not to say that it might not sound odd to someone's ears, you know, what somebody's belief is. But unless it's so obviously not based in any sort of religion or spirituality, the employer doesn't have a lot of ways to ask for documentation or proof. So if an employee says, I don't believe in putting anything not made by God in my body, you can question them, you know, sort of, how did you come up with that? How long have you believed that? That kind of thing. What you can't do is say, well, point me to the Bible phrase or the phrase in the Quran or the Torah or anything that says what you just told me. And you can't say, well, then I need a letter from your rabbi or your pastor, your priest documenting this. If they want to provide that, that's fine. But it's very difficult for an employer to ask. And it's only when there's something about the employee's behavior that raises an issue as to the sincerity of this religious belief, then employers can ask. So if, for instance, for this employee who doesn't want to put anything not made by God in her body, and you find out she requests smoke breaks a couple times a day, well, that's going to make you question, you know, what exactly we're talking about here. And so in that type of case, the employer would be justified in saying, well, look, we need a little more explanation, or we need some documentation, whatever it is. Most religious beliefs, you know, things like, well, I'm a Seventh-day Adventist, so I cannot work on certain days of the week. An employer would, you know, again, unless they've got some reason to question that this person actually is a Seventh-day Adventist, you know, and they have a second job that they're working on the days that they can't work, then, you know, again, that's a pretty commonly known belief of that religion. And so an employer would, you know, have to take their word for it. again, if it's a little more obscure or if it's something that doesn't quite sound religious, they can inquire further. But it's only when there's something, some real reason to doubt, that they can ask for any kind of documentation.
So where we have a situation where it's clear that somebody is making something up, whether they're disabled or they have a religious belief, I assume then the employer still needs to kind of make a risk-benefit analysis. We want to take the chance and tell this person, we're sorry, we don't buy it. And, you know, I guess you could say, okay, we're buying it. We may not believe it. We'll buy it. So you got to follow these accommodations. So I would assume that if the employer goes that route where we don't want to get into it with you, we'll accept this as true. This is what we expect you to do. But then the employee will not agree to those conditions that might be wearing a mask or something. What would be the next step at that point? Is that the point where you try to accommodate their beliefs and now you can terminate them?
Well, I think at that point you've tried to accommodate their beliefs. Like, okay, we're going to accept that you have whatever it is you have, religious belief, disability, whatever it is. But our way of accommodating that is say that you must wear a mask at all times inside the building and at any sort of company meetings, functions, that kind of thing. And the employee says, well, I don't believe in masks either, and so I'm not going to do that. That employee has rejected a reasonable accommodation. So in that case, the ADA or Title VII would say, you're no longer protected. We have offered you an effective, reasonable accommodation and you've rejected it. Unless they can come up with something else that is as effective, the employer at that point is under no longer under any obligation to keep them employed. Again, I think it's important that you kind of exhaust all the possibilities. But for something like this, if someone doesn't want to wear a mask or does not want to undergo testing and isn't in a job that can work remotely, there's really nothing that the employer can do at that point.
So what about if somebody believes that the masks themselves, particularly if they have a medical issue, is also something that they cannot do? So they can't have the vaccine and they feel that because they have asthma or whatever their condition might be, that masks aggravate that, etc. Now, and they can't work remotely, etc. Particularly in a healthcare setting, I mean, you're working in a medical office or something. That's kind of the dilemma right there. What do you recommend at that point? Is it possible where, you know, the accommodations are just not there and there is no way to resolve the issue?
Well, I think in light of sort of the current state of the pandemic, where we're seeing rises in cases, rises in severity of cases, if it's at the point where there's not an effective accommodation, you know, say they're patient facing, well, you can't work at home and do that. They don't want to wear a mask, or they say they can't wear a mask. You could possibly look at the weekly testing. To me, that's not all as effective, because obviously there's going to be, times unknown when, you might be exposed that you wouldn't be able to find out right away in a manner to protect everybody. If you get to the point where there's no accommodation that is either able to be made or that the employee is willing to accept, you're at a point where then your choice is to either just let it go or release them. And it is a cost-benefit analysis because, I always have to assume when you release somebody under those kinds of conditions, they're going to challenge that. And especially in this sort of hot button world with respect to the vaccine and masking and all those other issues, that I would not expect it to go unchallenged. But at the same time, to the extent that you have made a commitment to patient safety, to employee safety, to visitor safety, if there's nothing that can be done, your obligation is really to exit that employee.
Right. So in addition, we've got the liability issue where you have an employee that you terminate. And we're looking at this from the employer perspective. Whether or not you believe in COVID, and believe me, I have dentists and doctors that I work with who don't believe in it, but this is more of a liability issue, right? Yeah. So if you have the liability where you have the employee that may argue they're wrongfully terminated, if you don't take the steps to mandate vaccines, et cetera, there's a liability on the other side where other employees could claim that they were exposed as a result of your failure to take precautions. And I guess guests or patients coming to your office claim the same. Have you seen, or if not, you know, maybe it's still yet to come, those type of arguments and claims? So the employers kind of got issues on both sides that they have to deal with.
Exactly. And then sometimes it comes down to the question of which would you rather defend? You know, certainly on the other side of liability, like you said, with employees and patients, members of the public who might be exposed by somebody, there is absolutely liability there. The one interesting sort of wrinkle to this is that most, if not all, states at this point have passed some sort of legislation that provides some immunity to a business or to an employer, that if they take all the recommended steps, CDC or whoever it is, then take all reasonable precautions and somebody still gets ill from COVID, there's some immunity there. And the question I have had is that, all right, so you decide to mandate all your employees have get the vaccine, but you make an exception for one. Have you taken all those necessary steps? And I think the question may very well be no, that you haven't, if you've made an exception. So I think from the employer's sort of terminated employee liability, the liability that comes from a patient who becomes ill or an employee who becomes ill, you know, to me outweighs the challenge of a particular employee, especially I think in this environment where, you know, the EEOC has been very free with, yes, you can mandate vaccines. The CDC has been, you know, very robust in their recommendations about safety in the workplace. Certainly the liability of a patient becoming ill is a little different than a fellow employee becoming ill. That becomes more of a workers' compensation issue, but it's neither one of those situations, I think, is anything that an employer would want. And so again, which one would you rather defend? And I think I'd rather defend the employee who's been exited because there was no accommodation available or nothing that they would do.
Right, that makes sense. And then of course, you know, when we're looking at medical and dental, there are some other types of organizations like OSHA that provides guidelines as well. So there's a lot to take into account. You might be meeting EEOC requirements, but are you meeting OSHA requirements, right? So we have to kind of take that into account as well. And I think that's important. All right, so, you know, I guess some final pieces of advice here. We have employers that are kind of, we're in an ever-changing environment. Mm-hmm. Good news is the vaccine is now approved, so people making that argument are, you know, not going to be as successful anymore. But it's still a tough call, especially for small employers having to deal with. The other issues, you don't want to get rid of employees. They're difficult about the vaccine issue or about the masking issue, but they're so essential to your business. So sometimes it's like a really hard call. I guess, you know, as we go forward, we're going to see more and more of this. But is there any kind of advice that you're giving your employers? Do we just ride this out and kind of see what happens? Do we do our best until we turn a corner here? Or is there any other kind of advice we can give them?
Yeah, I think there is. I mean, again, when the vaccine first became available and people were starting to get vaccinated, I would say most employers that I would talk to were really going the incentivization route. You know, let's reward people for getting the vaccine, but we're not going to mandate it. And there's many reasons why you wouldn't mandate it. As we've seen these cases and sort of the tone and the rhetoric ramp up, you know, I think at this point, you're probably okay. I think if you stick to your masking requirements, if you stick to your social distancing, you know, OSHA came out with a emergency temporary standard just for healthcare, which basically says social distancing, make sure you're screening, that kind of thing. I think if you, you know, continue to do these precautions, you know, if you have, we've been dealing with, you know, temperature taking and sanitizing and all of that. I think we've gotten away from it because I think people thought, oh, this is resolved. And when it hasn't, I think we need to ramp back up to that. To the extent that you're taking those kinds of precautions with respect to your workforce and encouraging the vaccine, you know, I'd say you could ride it out for a little while. But to the extent that these conditions continue, I think everyone's going to be in the position of having to make that decision. And again, in healthcare, I think your arguments are a little bit diminished simply because of the patient face-to-face patient interaction that you have. You know, depending on your practice, it may be, you know, you may deal with a consistently vulnerable population. And so that may be, that may drive your decision more than anything else. So, you know, I think you can ride it for a little bit anyway, but I won't be surprised if we don't see more guidance and requirements from the federal government anyway, with respect to precautions that still need to be taken and new precautions as well. So I think it's just something we have to keep up with, and you know, and I think employers are in the same boat. So we're always certainly happy to talk through the issues. I become sort of the vaccine person here at the firm, but again, just monitoring from day to day is, I think, has become the way of our world in this issue. Right.
And I think, you know, two last things I want to say. One is a lot of employers, you know, really try and handle this on their own, not realizing that the emails or letters they get from employees are kind of setting them up in some ways for taking the wrong steps that open them up to liability. And the expense of defending an EEOC claim or something like that can be quite tremendous. You're going to spend a lot less talking to your lawyer on the phone.
Absolutely. A 10-minute phone call just talking through the steps can save you a lot of aggravation.
And even I don't always know the answer. I always kind of send it over to you or someone else in the employment department, because there are nuances here, and the repercussions of being wrong are pretty significant.
They can be. And like you said, there's always little exceptions. You know, for instance, I was doing research on needle phobia as a disability and whether that would need to be accommodated. So yes, there's lots of little details, and we are seeing just an enormous evolving of the law and guidance in this respect to these issues.
Right.
So yeah, keep up with it. Check with legal counsel. You know, like I said, it doesn't cost that much for that consultation, but it may save you stepping on some landmines as you go forward.
Absolutely. And I guess, you know, one final thing that occurs to me is that Biden is now talking about an additional shot, a booster of sorts down the road. And I guess it's now an approved vaccine. Are we going to see another round of dispute? I'm fully vaccinated. You can't make me get a booster. Where do you think we're going with that now?
Well, I'd like to think, and maybe this is wishful thinking, that people who have gotten the vaccine so far are the ones who don't really have that objection to it. And so my sense would be that for those individuals, the booster is probably not going to be anything earth-shaking to them. But I think there is probably a subset of either those vaccinated or those who continue to resist and protest, that may be a hard sell. But I think the issues are the same. If somebody says I can't or I won't, just engage with them, see why that is. If it's just something they feel like they shouldn't have to do, well, you know, that's too bad. They can make that choice then, whether they get it or not get it. I think the booster shot is something that we'll probably see a new round of challenge, but I don't think it will be as robust as it has been, if only for the fact that we're approaching like 175 million vaccinated. So I think as the pool shrinks of the unvaccinated, I think the complaints will as well.
Right. I think that's great. Well, that's great advice from Karen. Thanks for joining us.
And you're welcome.
Thank you all for joining us on the Health Law Hotspot today. You can check out our other podcasts at ralaw.com and find out more about us. And of course, if you have any questions, you can always feel free to reach out directly. Thanks so much. Join us next time.
The Retzel Health Law Hotspot is made available by the firm and its attorneys for educational purposes and to provide general information, not to provide specific legal advice. Use of the Retzel Health Law Hotspot does not create an attorney-client relationship between you and the firm or any of its attorneys. The Retzel Health Law Hotspot should not be used as a substitute for competent legal advice, and you should contact an attorney in your state about any legal needs or questions you may have.